is Jerry Pippin, and we are at the end of the Ozarks, and Rosemary Guiley is here, and you are now, I think, the head bottle washer and chief cook for the FADE investigations of UFOs, at least reporting. I don't know if that's your official title or not.
Well, I'm consulting editor now. That was an advancement over columnist. Sometimes I have to be a table slave at a conference, but yes, my primary area of interest in writing now for FADE is in ufology, which I find quite exciting. I do cover things like ghosts, vampires, paranormal experiences. I'm interested in everything, but I think ufology is really at the cutting edge of where a lot of streams of thought are coming together.
Yeah, we're going to get into vampires and ghosts here in a moment, but let's talk a little bit about ufology. You and I visited a little earlier, and you mentioned something to me that I thought was quite interesting. You said this is kind of a new avenue of investigating all of this.
Well, from
I'm paraphrasing it, but you said it a little more clearly than that.
It's for me, it's a renewed area. I've been interested in ufology since I was a kid. I was interested in space exploration and were there aliens out there and things like that. I find that now I think the field has evolved and matured and expanded beyond just nuts and bolts, physical evidence, abductions, things like a conspiracy, to embrace the whole idea of consciousness, the evolution of consciousness of human beings and our interaction with other intelligences in the cosmos. And that ufology is going to be the arena where we really explore that.
For instance, you're at this conference, and you run across a lady, and she says she's had some orbs visit her, and you're going to go out and try to look at one. Have you ever seen an orb?
I've not seen any orbs by naked eye. I have captured them on photographs.
But she says you can actually see these things.
Many people have had naked eye sightings at her property, so I'm very interested to see if I can, too.
Well, when we talked, you and I were talking, and this happens to you all the time. As soon as somebody sees you, and they know what you do in your books, you've written some great books, food. We'll get into it in a moment. Somebody started talking about vampires to us in the audience over there. You are such a pretty woman to be interested in such sordid subjects.
Well, I often get comments from people wondering how I can write books about angels and saints and then turn around and write a book about vampires. And actually, to me, it's just different aspects of
Maybe the same thing.
Absolutely.
Right.
And I think, for me, it's instructive to know the dark underside of things as well as the light side.
You know, people come up and tell you all kinds of stories, and I'm sure you've heard most of them. But I guess you kind of fit those into some sort of categories that you investigate overall. Like, well, I've heard this and I've heard this, and hey, that might fit into that. Like she was talking about something that you seem to be aware of it, but groups of people who think they're vampires that actually suck energy out of you instead of blood. Is that right?
Psychic vampirism has been around for a long time, and there are magical techniques that people can study and learn to draw energy, vital energy, off another human being so that they become more energized and even youthful in the process.
So literally you're saying if you're, you got a magnetic personality, you got a lot of, somebody might draw up on that and use it? Somebody
could deliberately. There also are unwitting psychic vampires, people who just sort of suck energy off you, and they're not even aware that they're doing it. But we've all been in the presence of someone who literally left us drained, and that's exactly what's going on. We've been vampirized.
So that's what you're talking about. You've been zapped right there. You didn't realize it. Are vampires? Is that? Really, are there? I mean, I hear about the condition where people have to drink blood. I don't know if that actually exists or not, but are vampires real?
Vampires are indeed real. They're part of demonology. When you look at the old cases from earlier centuries where people described vampire attacks, they're really not about blood drinking. They're about energy depletion. It was believed that the restless dead were jealous of the living. They could leave the graves at night, and they would come and pester the living They might want sex. They might want energy. They might create nightmares, poltergeist disturbances. And it was assumed that they literally drank blood, because when the corpses were dug up, when people went out looking for the vampires, they would find blood oozing from orifices and corpses that were natural decomposition, but they didn't know that. So they assumed that somehow these spirits were sucking blood. Actually, people reported just being drained of energy, and their health would waste away.
So the stories of the vampires and the beautiful woman's been attacked by the vampire night. She's very pale and listless the next day. That may be half true.
Well, the idea of it's true.
Right.
And it was fiction, really, that put forth the idea of getting bitten on the neck and having the blood drunk in a very graphic sort of way.
It seems like all of these early vampire fiction stories are centered in Eastern Europe. But I guess vampires are everywhere. I noticed Farah Yadoza the other day was talking to you at the Gettysburg Conference, which was pretty interesting. And in Turkey, they have lots of beliefs of vampires and things like that.
They do, and we find vampire demons and entities in mythologies around the world. The vampire cult that we are most familiar with does come out of Eastern Europe. It comes from Hungary, Romania, that area.
Mm-hmm. How about here in America? I mean, Dracula came to America, I think, in one of the stories, in the movies at least. You have a lot of people report to you vampire stories even today. I mean, do you get tips about hey, you know, you go up to, I think it was a town in Wisconsin. Roberto, wasn't it last year, and the guy was telling us about the guy was probably a vampire, and a couple of people were missing, and they couldn't find him. I'm sure you
all the time,
about
yes.
That. Any credence in any of these stories? Anything?
I tend to think not. There are people who would like to be vampires, and they really use fiction as their model. They join societies and secret clubs and things like that, where they have a mythical history, they share blood, usually in small amounts, and sometimes they begin to think that they have acquired...
You ever been to any of these meetings?
I've not been to any meetings, but I have interviewed individuals who participate in them, yes. I think that in many cases it's sort of a self-fulfilling expectation. If you believe that you have acquired supernatural powers, you will begin to exhibit certain tendencies or characteristics that reaffirm that belief.
That seems to be a lot of the problems of investigating paranormal, in my opinion, is sometimes imagination takes over and becomes fact, almost with somebody.
That's very true. Life begins to imitate art.
Uh-huh. To me, in the UFO field, it appears that a lot of things that people talk to me about, abductions and contacts, if they weren't around the UFO area scenario, weren't familiar with that, they might be able to call it as a demon or ghost or angel experiences. You wrote a book on angels.
I've written several books on angels, and I've done quite a bit of study in demonology as well. I have an article in the current UFO special that Fate has just published called Vampires from Outer Space, where I compare ETs to vampires. There are many characteristics that from a mythological and folklore perspective, ETs share with vampires. They've already been compared to fairies. They've been compared to angels. There's a vampiric element to them, too. They come at night. They paralyze people. They cause nightmares. They transport individuals to distant locations, drain people of energy. The real vampire folklore is actually quite sexually active. The whole idea of the vampire who has to have an erotic experience through blood, that's fiction. That's a product of Victorian fiction. But in folklore, vampires want to have sexual experiences. And so the sexual experiences described by many abductees are vampiric in nature.
So what we're getting at here is, I guess it's a matter of perception, whether it's a little gray or a vampire.
I think what it really ultimately tells us, if we pull back and look at the big picture, is that there is a continuum of human beings having encounters of certain kinds in other dimensions and with otherworldly entities. And I think that those experiences are couched in a context that makes sense to the culture and mindset and beliefs of the times.
You know, I kind of glossed over your books about angels, but tell me a little bit about angels. I mean, do we have guardian angels, or angels show up at night? What's the deal with angels?
I do believe in angels. I believe that they exist in their own right. Part of us, like our higher self, could be considered angelic in nature, too. They have a complex hierarchy. I think that there are angels who look after different things in the cosmos. We do have guardian angels. I think that we have lots of angels around us at any given time to call on, depending on what we're dealing with in life.
So in other words, the archangel or the head angel, that's not too far removed from real.
Well, actually, when you look at the mythologies of angels, even from a cross-cultural perspective, you find hierarchies of beings, and the closer you get to the source of all being, to God the Creator, the more remote these beings are from Earth and from humans.
In other religions besides the Christian religion, do angels exist?
Well, angel-like beings certainly do. Yeah, the angel itself comes out of monotheism. The early Hebrews borrowed beliefs from the Babylonians and the Egyptians and integrated them into their own. The angel was a messenger, someone who wasn't necessarily friendly towards human beings. We've kind of fluffed angels up a lot.
Talking with Rosemary Guiley, you know, we started out this interview talking about UFOs and mythology and subjects like you've been writing about angels and vampires. And you, why don't you expand a little bit on exactly why you're very interested in UFOs to begin with, but it really kind of complements your other interest.
Well, for me, Jerry, ufology represents an arena where a lot of streams of research that I've done over the years are coming together. I've done over 30 books now on everything A to Z in the paranormal and mystical and spiritual, and I can see how people's experiences and encounters with otherworldly things, we put different labels on the similarities between them all. For example, angels, aliens, on the dark side, the vampires, the experiences of the saints, the idea of having the saints had superpowers, they had instant transport, they had magical abilities. I think we're going to see a return of a true understanding of magic, and that's part of this area too, because the things that the ETs are capable of seem like magic to us, the way our technology would seem like magic to earlier generations.
Right, there's been many instances of them coming through walls and things that are just unheard of.
And yet those are mystical abilities that people in ancient times reported being able to do. The saints, for example, had the ability to bilocate, to travel instantly. They had clairvoyance. They called it mystical knowledge. So we're developing these powers within us, and I think that's how we're interacting in a bigger way with a larger field of consciousness. For some of us, we see it as ETs. For other people, we see it as angels. I think we're going to need to redefine our terms here about what we're dealing with, come up with some new terminology that's going to get us away from old labels.
You know, one of the side benefits of you taking the UFO job at Fate is that you still go to a lot of ghost conferences, for lack of a better term, I guess.
They are ghost conferences. I'm a speaker at many of them, yes.
Yes, I so you're adding a different perspective when you go to UFO conferences and vice versa, I think. I mean, just naturally.
Yes, the ghost
conferences. Let's talk about ghost conferences. Where are you going to be here pretty soon? I know you're going to be in June. You got an interesting one. I think it's June or July.
I'm going to several ghost conferences. Last Saturday, April 29th, I'm going to be in New Jersey at the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Conference. Going to be talking about the real Rose Red, the place where Stephen King's Rose Red miniseries was filmed. I spent a night there by myself, and it was quite haunted. And then I'm talking about vampires at
Have you ever been scared stiff in one of some of these places?
I've been pretty unsettled, but I've never been truly terrified. But I'll tell you, the night I spent at Thornwood Castle, which was the setting for Rose Red, there was such a commotion going on downstairs that I decided that I might not want to go and look and find out.
You literally heard something from your bed upstairs.
Yes. There were a lot of thumpings, door openings and closings, voices. When I went down the next morning, there was some rearrangement of the furniture. I was the only person in there. There wasn't even a staff person there at night. So I could not blame anything.
So wait a minute. You spent in this haunted place yourself, by yourself, all night long.
I did. And actually,
you do that often?
Very seldom do you get to spend some place by yourself. Usually when you do an investigation, you work in teams. And I had been to Thornwood Castle. I knew it was the setting for Rose Red. I made arrangements with the owner to come. I just wanted to spend a night and see what happened. And when I arrived, I was informed that, well, you're going to be the only one here. And not only are you the only one here, there's not even going to be any staff people here. So I had the whole place to myself.
Well, you know, on one hand, that's very good luck. On the other hand, it's very scary. And, I mean, it sounds like maybe they did that on purpose.
Indeed, I think so. Now, the disadvantage is that you don't have another person to corroborate what you experience. But on the other hand, I knew that if I heard something or saw something, I could not blame it on any other human agency because I was the only
yes.
person there.
And you investigate these things more than I do, but it just seems to me that if you're by yourself, things are more likely to happen. From the supernatural standpoint.
That's often the case. When people have a haunting experience, it's often unexpected. They're by themselves. They're in what you would call a lightly dissociated state. They might be thinking about something else or relaxing. And then suddenly, they are intruded upon by an apparition, an unusual sound, a smell, a feeling of a presence.
30 books takes a lot of time. An effort to write, so you're no slouch by any means, but at the same time, after 30 books worth, looking back at all of these experiences you've had in investigating, and you have to have experiences, do you have any explanations for these, like the thumping downstairs? Do you think you have any idea what that could have been?
I do feel that there are places that contain residues. Some ghosts are this residual energy that continues to
you mean
reside.
Left over from like the old story about the terrific car wreck or whatever, and they don't know what to go. They're trapped.
There's a residual energy that yes,
some credence in
I do that it gets trapped in, if you want to call it the ether or etheric space or psychic space. And if you're in the right place at the right time, in the right frame of mind, you can tune into that. There are intelligence to some of the ghost encounters, too. Ghosts that seem to interact purposefully with people.
Well, that leads me to my next question, strangely enough. You've written 30 books. Ghosts probably know that you write books. And has anybody from the other side made a special effort to contact you?
I do feel guided by a lot of presences when I engage in a particular project, and they shift according to the topic that I'm working on. What I feel more comes from what I would call spiritual areas rather than the realm of the dead. But it wouldn't surprise me if I had some influences from those areas, too.
So I guess it's a matter of definition, but You're not saying necessarily that everybody that dies comes back as a ghost.
No, not at all.
Okay. And you're not saying at the same time that we're all, maybe you are, that we're all spiritual and we keep coming back. Is it all of us that keep, that have this lasting, that we transcend time and keep coming back, you know?
You mean as a spirit?
Yes.
No, I think it depends on place and the individual and emotion. There often is an emotional intensity to a haunting, something violent took place there, or of frequently an anguish, very intense emotion like that. And this is what seems to imprint something in etheric space.
Let me ask you something. People that are murdered, some people, you know, you hear about this, it would appear to me they'd all come back and try to get the murderer. And that doesn't seem to be the case.
Unfortunately, we don't know what all happens after. Nobody really knows what happens after death. And there could be some people who experience violent death who, by some theories, go that they are sort of in a sleep state after death because they're in shock, they need healing. Others move on to other arenas. They're not pulled back. But many psychics who work in the solution of murders often get in touch with the spirits of the victims, and when the case is resolved, they feel that energy, then move on to another place.
Are you psychic?
I am psychic, but I am naturally oriented toward...
Well, I better watch what I'm thinking.
I'm naturally oriented toward other dimensional beings. I'm not mediumistic in terms of tuning into the land of the dead, human dead, that is.
Well, you're going to have to go look at the orbs. As I can hear in the background, the noise is beginning to get here because the people are coming out from the meeting, and you found a lady here in Eureka Springs that says she's going to show you some orbs. What do you think these orbs are?
Nobody really knows, and I don't know myself, because some of them do seem to have intelligence to them. I think that a lot of times people just mistake pixels and digital photographs or dust, or there are a lot of photographs of orbs that can be explained. But I have seen some that are very difficult to explain. So, and it's very controversial, actually, in ghost investigation, exactly what orbs are.
Oh, and I have some photographer friends that really get beside themselves on both sides of that issue. You can say, well, this is water in a lens. Well, what? I know better than that. And then other people, will say, oh, there's no such thing, you know. And then other people believe in it completely. So it's not a neutral area, really.
It's not. And I don't think we're going to get a resolution anytime soon.
So the question is, are orbs ghost lights, or are they more mechanical, like UFOs, using something like a predator to go look around?
I think we can make a case for orbs of different kinds. I think some of them might be what you would call probes, that they have a purpose and a direction, maybe even some intelligence to them. And others may be associated with residual haunting phenomena.
Now, you know, you're writing a lot with fate. You're working with fate a lot. You're traveling a lot. Now, are you going to have time to write a book, another book?
It does take away from writing time, but after all, I do have a team of fairies who work for me, and they do a lot of typing at night.
Oh, they do it at night, huh? Now I know how you wrote those 30 books. Rosemary, it's always a pleasure seeing you, and we look forward to running across you again soon. You are going to some more UFO conferences, I know.
I will be at MUFON in July in Denver, going to Roswell. I'll be at NUFOC in September.
So you're going to Roswell, huh? We've been there the last 3 years.
It's a great event.
We'll talk to you later. Rosemary, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
You're listening to the UFO Files. We're broadcasting from the end of the Ozarks. Our own location producer is Roberta Scott. Until next time, cheers.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month. In Fate Magazine.
Fate.
Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.